Welcome to the Science of Self podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group and Peter Hollins. Today is Friday, May 28, 2021. Today's episode comes from Peter Hollins' book, Legendary Self-Discipline, Lessons from Mythology and Modern Heroes on Choosing the Right Path over the Easy Path. Check the show notes for the link to that book on Audible. Sir James Dyson and the Decision of Perseverance. So great is English businessman and inventor Sir James Dyson's success that you probably already know what he's famous for simply by his name. Dyson vacuum cleaners are considered the gold standard all over the world, and people like and trust this brand more than any other. But this great empire took time to build, and it started with nothing more than Dyson getting frustrated with his own Hoover vacuum cleaner. It always lost suction power, and replacing its disposable bags was a chore. It might be a simple thing to say that Dyson went on to create the world's first bagless vacuum cleaner using the idea of cyclonic separation, but this conceals how epic a journey it really was. It took a whopping 5,126 failures for Dyson to get the invention just right, and that was just the beginning. Even when he had designed a product he knew was superior in so many ways, the fact was that the disposable vacuum bag market was a million-pound industry, and he faced immense pushback in trying to market and sell his invention. No distributors wanted to go against the grain, and the market was unwilling to budge. People liked and knew Hoover cleaners, and that was that. But, perhaps taking a page out of Edison's book, Dyson pushed on and tried to find something that would work. He marketed a bright pink version of his new Dyson vacuum cleaner in Japan in 1983, where it won an award. From there, he was able to get a patent for the design in the United States. Still, he faced resistance in the UK. But where there wasn't a way, Dyson attempted to make one. Instead of giving up, he decided he'd have to make his own company. At the age of 46, he embarked on producing and marketing the product himself. You can already guess how the rest of the story went. Dyson built that company up, and today, it's valued at almost $4 billion. Like Edison, he was tireless in his work and never allowed adversity to stop him. But Dyson displayed a truly rare single-mindedness. The next time you look at a Dyson vacuum cleaner, you can imagine it as a symbol of rock-solid perseverance. Dyson pushed through frightening debt, discouragement from his peers, and immense resistance from the market. So, what would a vacuum cleaner magnate teach us about personal discipline? Dyson is, if anything, an expert on failure. Rather than trying to avoid it at all costs, he now actively seeks it out, knowing how valuable it is in the creation and innovation process. He even spends several million pounds every week on research and design, i.e., the pursuit of failing, learning, and trying again, or what he calls educative failure. Stumbling upon the next great invention in an aha moment is a myth, Dyson says. It's only by learning from mistakes that progress is made. Each failure brought me closer to solving a problem. What does failing give you? Insight and experience. It tells you what doesn't work and maybe even why. Failing is a lesson if we can learn to embrace it. Imagine a 42-year-old Dyson with money problems, bad debt, literally thousands of failed prototypes under his belt, and a market that didn't want what he had to sell. It's easy to think of the countless people who would have given up in such circumstances, but Dyson did not. He had confidence in his ideas and the courage to keep on, even when others didn't share his vision. The incredible thing is that Dyson achieved after so long, and more than that, he kept going even after he'd found some success. His perseverance was not just a way to overcome adversity and come out the other end. It was a way of life. Today, his company thrives on open-mindedness, bravery, and courage. He's claimed to love hiring younger people who are unburdened with the expectations of how things should be done, and are more fearless when it comes to trying something completely new. Here we see the growth mindset appearing again. By putting ourselves in the frame of eternal students, we never allow ourselves to become complacent or assume we know all the answers. If we can comfortably tolerate the unknown, we can give ourselves a real chance of actually grasping it and doing things that haven't been done before. In the end, it's not quite what Dyson did as how he did it. There must have surely been times when he doubted himself and was tired and just wanted to give up. Undoubtedly, his work took an enormous amount of effort and diligence and, you guessed it, self-discipline. We often think of self-discipline only as the skill it takes to push through and work hard, even when we're lazy or tired or unmotivated, but it's more than this. Self-discipline is the ability to drive ourselves forward when everything else is threatening that progress, or when we don't even know the direction we're supposed to be going in. Self-discipline is about the habit of looking plainly at your fear every day and realizing it will never go away, and that if you want to achieve your goals, you're going to have to act despite that fear. When asked, Dyson tells his admirers that he never gives advice and that we shouldn't listen to advice. He even warns against doing market research because it so often takes the wind out of your sails. He believes people shouldn't strive to be entrepreneurs in the first place. Rather, identify what you care about and go at it full throttle. The success will come when it comes, but in the meantime, your work is always here, in the present, being the best you can be, no matter what. Like so many ultra-accomplished businessmen of his caliber, he ironically doesn't think of himself as one, and likely wouldn't have found the same success if his primary goal was to win fame and make a lot of money. This gives us a clue to the correct attitude towards success. Those who make it work are masters at the process, and they're not overly attached to the outcome. This is the growth mindset applied to business. If your ego and vanity shackle you to an idea of how your success should look, you'll be less resilient in the face of adversity and less willing to learn when life doesn't go to plan. The greatest people are often far more comfortable with complete failure and even humiliation than those who have their eyes set on fame and glory at the finish line. These lessons are not just for business. Anytime we want to improve, learn, create something new, or gain mastery or knowledge, we must work for it. Just like Jean-Dominique Bauby was able to write a bestseller with less physical capacity than most people, it's sobering to think that Dyson was successful even with far more resistance and difficulty than the average person can expect in their endeavors. The next time you look at the limits and obstacles in your way, ask yourself if they're really preventing you from doing what you want, or if it's you and the beliefs you hold that are keeping you back. This is an exercise in recalibration. For whatever reason, some of us may believe that life ought to be far easier than it is, and take any sign of discomfort, adversity, or unpleasantness as a sure sign that we're on the wrong path and should just quit. Anybody can dream about the wonderful goals they'd love to have for themselves, but the more decisive factor is how much discomfort and uncertainty you're able to withstand, not how big and fanciful you can make your dreams. Anyone could say, it would be great to be a wealthy and successful businessman. But the rubber hits the road when you realize that this path is one of constantly facing your fears and working incredibly hard. Dyson perhaps possessed an almost supernatural talent for persevering despite all odds. And many would correctly say it's survivor bias to claim that his perseverance was a good thing. Would we have admired him so much if he had failed all his life and never made anything of his business? Nobody can predict the future, and there's no saying what fate or luck will land in our laps. But for someone like Dyson, this is irrelevant. Maintaining an unflappable attitude and a pride in one's work, whether it's successful or not, is what will keep you persevering in the absence of external reward, praise, or anything else. Like the other people we've explored in this book, Dyson found a source of his own value and meaning, and it came from within. Only by having a fearsome inner drive can we keep going on, no matter what the circumstances. When we believe in ourselves, are well aligned to our values, and care about the process rather than the outcome, then we can simply take failures along the way in stride. It may be a helpful practice to joyfully welcome failure when it happens to you. Literally smile and celebrate when things flop, fail, or turn out completely differently than you'd hoped for. It's proof that you're growing. Thank the universe for giving you a great clue and a wonderful gift on your endless journey. Don't give your ego the chance to realize it's been bruised. Laugh at yourself if you must, and swiftly move along. Rather than turning away in embarrassment at what's been done wrong, simply become curious like Edison and study the problem itself. Why did it happen this way? What could you do better next time? How are you going to make that happen? Identifying the very next step to get you back in the game can be a wonderful antidote to feeling demoralized at a setback. This doesn't only apply to inventions dreamt up in a laboratory. We all make grand plans for ourselves that crash and burn. Our dream job isn't what we thought it would be. We bought something foolish, said the wrong thing, broke something valuable, mismanaged a social matter, injured our knee while running, or discovered our souffle keeps getting a dent in the middle, no matter what we do. But it's okay to fail. It's okay to change course midway, and it's okay to start all over again and try something really outrageous. Provided your mistakes don't literally threaten lives, why shouldn't you take the opportunity to try as many things as you can? Why shouldn't you use your entire life as a laboratory and test out what works and what doesn't? To practice some of this in your own life, start changing the way you talk about failure. A good start is to remove the word from your vocabulary entirely. Instead of saying you failed, reframe it. You got a different result from the one you were expecting. This small tweak can lead to large mental shifts around the way you think about learning, work, and failure. Make a point of voluntarily sharing all the times you've made a mistake. Be honest and straightforward. Isn't it a relief, in some ways, to just accept that things aren't perfect the first time around? If someone calls you out on an error or criticizes your work, thank them. It takes a deep confidence and sense of security to know that being wrong doesn't threaten your sense of self-worth and isn't something to deny or get defensive about. Rather than seeing a mistake or failure as life slapping you in the face, start to think of it as a kind teacher who is constantly working to keep you on your toes, to help you evolve and develop. If you're comfortable looking at, talking about, and experiencing feelings of failure, you become, in a sense, immune to them. You realize how little power failing has over you. You failed. So what? What's more, you'll fail again. So what? A great insight can come when you realize that people will often only judge your mistakes harshly if you do so first. If you can look at your life without shame or regret or embarrassment, very few other people will be tempted to do so. If your attitude is to never be ashamed of the results of hard work and curiosity, why should anyone else? Stephen King and the Defeat of Judgment, Rejection, and Criticism. Stephen King's story of failure is now so well known to other writers that it's taken on the quality of a myth itself, like the 12 impossibly heroic tasks assigned to Hercules. The story goes that King's first novel to be published, Carrie, was rejected 30 times before finally making it, and the rest, as they say, is history. King today has published 61 novels and 200 short stories, and several of his best-loved works have been made into films, comics, and TV series, including The Shining, It, Pet Sematary, and many more. Today, even those completely unfamiliar with the horror thriller genre will recognize his work. He's won the Bram Stoker Award, British Fantasy Society Award, World Fantasy Award, the Medal for Distinguished Contribution to American Letters, the National Medal of Arts, and the O. Henry Award, to name a few. But in the beginning, King was just an unknown writer with a passion for writing. With Carrie, even he himself got fed up and threw the manuscript in the bin. It was his wife Tabitha who fished it out and made him persevere. Thus started a literary career that only went from strength to strength. King has even gone on to write popular books and articles for writers, talking about his life, his process, and his trials and tribulations as a creator. He's said to have literally hung up every single rejection letter received from a publishing house on the wall of his office. He claims that seeing them there doesn't demoralize him, but eggs him on to do better, to persevere. And it paid off. Stephen King today is a household name and one of the richest novelists in the world, with a net worth of almost $500 million. His books have sold more than 350 million copies internationally. According to King, talent is cheaper than table salt. What separates the talented individual from the successful one is a lot of hard work. Sound familiar? We can imagine Jean-Dominique Bauby or Edison or Mark Zupan saying the same thing. King is no starving artist who decides to put pen to paper only when the spirit moves him or when he's feeling inspired. Instead, he's taken a very practical, no-nonsense, and humble approach to the making of art. Just do it. King does not believe that artists should try to work other jobs to support their art, but rather that it is art that gives nourishment to life, and creativity should be prioritized. This means that anyone who takes the artistic life seriously must actively pursue it and have the self-discipline to push back against fear, laziness, distraction, or lack of motivation. It's fitting that the horror writer has had fear so centrally at the core of his life's work. The author, like so many others, suffered from sometimes cripplingly low self-confidence in his work, doubt about his talent, and even the temptation to give up and do something easier. Every aspiring writer knows that the inner critic can be so relentless and painful that they would rather avoid creating at all for fear of being judged, rejected, or criticized. But isn't it refreshing to know that even one of the most successful authors of our time not only failed occasionally, but failed often, even extravagantly? For some authors, or artists of any kind, criticism can be incredibly difficult to take. It shrivels the ego and demolishes confidence. You could find yourself asking, who am I to think that I have something to say or something to create? Why should anybody listen to me? But perhaps King's success comes down to adopting the right attitude to this rejection. I have spent a good many years since, too many I think, being ashamed about what I write. I think I was 40 before I realized that almost every writer of fiction or poetry who has ever published a line has been accused by someone of wasting his or her God-given talent. If you write, or paint, or dance, or sculpt, or sing, I suppose, someone will try to make you feel lousy about it. That's all. King doesn't have an explanation for this. Who knows why people tear one another down or judge or criticize? In any case, it doesn't matter. The existence of criticism is simply to be regarded as a fact of life and accepted along with any other natural law. The trick is not to give rejection too much authority over you. This is true for a writer especially, but applies to anyone who creates, builds, performs, designs, or offers something for public consumption. It can be so easy to assume that people who claim you're bad are right, but who's to say? The only one who can ultimately decide on our self-worth is ourselves. The 30 rejections that King received on Carrie, were they because his book was objectively worthless? If King had thought so, or rather if his wife had thought so, the book would have remained in the trash and everyone would have assumed that, yes, it was unfit for publication. Many, many talented people have been dissuaded from expressing themselves, saying what they need to or using their talents for their fullest solely because they fear the judgment and rejection of others. What an enormous waste. Think of all the many stories the world would not have gotten to appreciate had King thrown in the towel and decided that he wasn't good enough and not worth listening to. But we do the same to ourselves and our dreams and talents every time we take rejection personally and decide to withdraw from life as a result. Whether it's in artistic criticism, whether it comes from the opposite sex, one's peers, or a larger community, rejection hurts. King is not superhuman, And it's worth remembering that negative reviews or harsh criticism are no less painful for him to hear than they would be to any novice author. But the difference, perhaps, is that King doesn't allow any of this to interfere with his writing at all. In fact, he uses the negative and disparaging words of others as fuel to power his further ambition. While it's perfectly okay to feel upset when you are turned down, criticized, or found wanting, King shows us the only thing that really matters is that you persevere. There will always be someone who dislikes the work we do, but so what? By the same token, there will always be someone who appreciates and adores it. Why not focus on those people? Once again, we see that contrary to what we might have internalized along the way, a big ego and success seldom go together. Humility and hard work have a greater success rate than grand plans that never materialize because the planner is unwilling to get messy, fail, or put the hours in. At the heart of it is fear. Fear, in all its forms, can hold us back and make us doubt ourselves. We cannot live without fear, but we can learn the proper attitude toward it, that it never gets to decide what we do, and it certainly never gets to tell us what we're worth. Fear is normal and inevitable, but there's no reason to let it control or limit us. If we can accept fear, maybe get comfortable with it as going too far, we can turn our attention to other things that matter, like why we want to create in the first place, and what values we want our life to be guided by. Like Edison and Dyson, King simply came to accept that fear was part of the process. Self-doubt doesn't mean you have to abandon your dreams, it just means you're human. It may even be that King learned all this in the first place by having someone else, his wife, believe in him when even he himself didn't. Though nobody would argue that it's a good idea to put your self-worth in someone else's hands, there's a lot to be said for surrounding yourself with people who believe in you and will support you, or even push you when necessary. Critics can destroy a person's vision, but genuine and thoughtful supporters can build it up until you're strong enough to trust yourself. If you find that ego and fear and rejection are holding you back in life, a counterintuitive way to tackle it is to avoid criticizing others. When we disparage another person's efforts or creations, we are really expressing our own attitudes toward thinking out of the box, making a mistake, or trying something a bit brave. Do you mock or denigrate others? If so, you may find that being kinder and more compassionate paradoxically makes it easier for you to be kind to yourself. Your self-discipline efforts may come down to constantly reminding yourself that the only real critic is you. Will you give yourself permission to try, to fail, to experiment, or will you take a hostile attitude to things that are new and experimental? There's also a link in the show notes to the full episode transcript and links that we'd like you to use to leave us a comment. Peter and I would like to know what you think about the show, what you find useful, or what you might like to see differently in the show. Please take a moment, drop us a comment, or send us an email, and we'll be very grateful. Have a great day. This has been Legendary Self-Discipline, Lessons from Mythology and Modern Heroes on Choosing the Right Path over the Easy Path, written by Peter Hollins, narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2020 by Peter Hollins. Production copyright by Peter Hollins.